This is BOA News, reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. We begin with a developing story. A train partially derailed along Taiwan's east coast Friday, injuring an unknown number of passengers and causing potential fatalities. Media reports say 300 passengers were on board, four of whom were listed as in critical condition. Reports said a truck fell from a cliff above and landed on the tracks, where a train emerging from a tunnel smashed into it. We'll keep you abreast as we get more details. The Biden administration is stepping up efforts to convince Americans who are skeptical of the COVID-19 vaccines to get their shots. Surveys show those skeptical are most likely to be swayed by local, community, and medical encouragement by people they know and trust. The president and vice president urge community and religious leaders to keep encouraging vaccinations. They're part of a coalition of public health, athletic, faith, and other groups the administration hopes will help overcome vaccine hesitancy as the nation prepares for all adults to be eligible for shots by next month. The World Health Organization's Director General said Thursday the COVAX facility to distribute COVID-19 vaccines to poorer countries faces a serious challenge to meet demand. Speaking in Geneva, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said COVAX has already delivered 35 million doses to more than 78 countries, but there is still a serious challenge on vaccine equity and availability. Speaking at the same briefing, an epidemiologist said that Brazil was in a very serious situation as several states declared emergencies and hospitals around the country were being overwhelmed. For more news, join us voanews.com via remote. This is VOA News. Good Friday masses were celebrated across Australia as worshippers told of their joy at being able to mark Easter in person. Last year, services were held online due to the coronavirus pandemic. St. Mary's Cathedral in Sydney opened for Friday Mass with 100% capacity allowed, although the church was not completely full for the service. Father Don Richardson told the congregation, "We're conscious that many of our fellow Catholics all around the world are unable to be together in numbers to commemorate these days of the Lord's saving passion, death, and resurrection." Peruvians are preparing to spend Easter amidst a strict quarantine after a spike in COVID-19 infections. The Peruvian capital, Lima, began a third quarantine ordered by central government to help prevent an uptick and infections, as happened in previous festivities. The restrictions will be in place until April 4th. Citizens will only be able to leave their homes to go shopping for basic necessities, and private vehicles will be prohibited. Despite quarantines, restrictions, and vaccinations, Peru is experiencing the worst of its second wave of COVID-19. According to official figures, Peru reporting more than 1,500,000 coronavirus cases and 52,008 deaths, according to Johns Hopkins University. A more contagious Brazilian variant of the coronavirus has appeared in the U.S. state of Michigan, which has the nation's highest infection rate in the past week. It was found in a resident of Bay County, where health officials are investigating the person's exposure history. The State Department says the Brazilian variant is considered more contagious than other strains. Variants first identified in Britain and South Africa have also shown up there. National security advisors from the United States, South Korea, and Japan are meeting Friday to discuss every aspect of North Korea policy. According to a senior administration official in Washington, it is the first such three-way meeting of the country since Joe Biden became president. The meeting at the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, the capital of Maryland, comes after North Korea test-fired into waters a cruise missile and then a pair of short-range ballistic missiles. The senior administration official said Friday's talks will also touch on other regional issues of mutual concern, including the tragic situation in Myanmar and Beijing's growing assertiveness in the South China Sea. For more news, please join us, voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, reporting by remote, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, April 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Southern African leaders promise action on Mozambique insurgency.
We have formed groups as a troika. One of them will result in taking this further so that we as SADC respond in a helpful manner to ensure the integrity and sovereignty of one of our own.
Egypt's Suez Canal Authority investigates causes of container ship accident. A report on France's role in Rwanda's genocide fails to lay to rest a dark past. Liberian voters say no to changing presidential terms and dual citizenship. And Nigerians will protest President Buhari's medical trip to London.
We are not just protesting, we are also writing to the UK government that they must immediately begin the process of banning Nigerian president and those holding public offices from seeking medical attention in the United Kingdom.
And today is World Autism Awareness Day as we spotlight the condition in Kenya. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Botswana President Mokwesi Masisi says member states of the Southern African Development Community, SADC, will respond in a meaningful manner to the deadly Islamist insurgency in northern Mozambique. Masisi made the comments this week after meeting with Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Botswana President Mokwesi Masisi told reporters late Wednesday he talked to his South African counterpart Cyril Ramaphosa about the deteriorating situation in northern Mozambique prior to his arrival in Harare. At the State House in Harare, Masisi said his talk with Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa was dominated by the situation in Mozambique.
I have reported to President Mnangagwa the contents of my discussions with President Ramaphosa, and we have formed views as a troika. One of them will result in taking this further so that we as SADC respond in a helpful manner to ensure that we assure the integrity and sovereignty of one of our own, never to be assaulted by dissident, rebellious and non-state actor forces that undermine the democratic potential of peace in the region.
Since 2017, an Islamist insurgency has raged in Mozambique's oil-rich Cabo Delgado province, calling it an acute crisis. UNICEF said this week that approximately 350,000 children have been displaced since the insurgency began. The Children's World Board said there's a cholera outbreak underway and COVID-19 is spreading as well. Adriano Nuvunga is a coordinator of the Mozambique Human Rights Defenders Network. Speaking from Maputo via a messaging application, Nuvunga said what is happening in the Cabo Delgado province is barbaric and SADC must quickly come in.
So it's quite disturbing to see that SADC is silent, is doing nothing. Since the Troika meeting in Harare last May, and when they promised to come forth and support Mozambique, nothing has happened, and Mozambique is resorting to international mercenary companies which are committing all sorts of brutalities, human rights abuse, and some war crimes. So I think SADC is not doing enough.
Tendaiwo Peter Marege is with Coventry University's Center for Trust, Peace and Social Relations in England. He says all SADC leaders must call for another meeting and come up with a more specific program for Mozambique.
That program of action must have deliverables and actionable points of what sort of outcomes does SADC require or look up to following the intervention. It must also provide regional collaborative intervention strategies with the East African community, given that there's a likelihood that the conflict may spill over into Tanzania, Malawi, and therefore that regional comparative approach must also inform the program of action.
SADC does not have a standing army, unlike the West Africa bloc, ECOWAS. In the past, individual countries have deployed their armies to quell security threats in other member countries. Zimbabwe sent troops to the Democratic Republic of Congo and in Mozambique in the 1980s and in 1998, respectively, while South Africa deployed to quell post-election violence in Lesotho. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
French President Emmanuel Macron will reportedly visit Kigali in coming weeks after a report he commissioned sheds a harsh light on France's alleged role in Rwanda's 1994 genocide. As Lisa Bryant reports from Paris, if Macron had hoped that the report would put the controversy over French actions to rest, it seems to be doing the opposite.
Sounds of a Paris ceremony a few years ago commemorating a new memorial to the roughly 800,000 victims of Rwanda's genocide. The memorial wasn't enough to end a dark chapter in French-Rwandan relations. Today, it's uncertain whether a new report by French historians can do so either. Reactions have been trickling in this week to the so-called Duclair report on France's role in the genocide. The report, based on 2 years of research, is named after Vincent Duclair, who headed the fact-finding commission of 14 historians. It found Paris under former President François Mitterrand, who was close to the Hutu-led government that carried out the genocide, bears serious responsibility in the mass slaughter of Tutsis and moderate Hutus in Rwanda between April and July of 1994. But it concluded there was no evidence France was an accomplice in the killing spree.
François Mitterrand, au fond, décide d'une intervention militaire française en octobre 1990.
Historian Duclair told France 24 that Mitterrand was blinded by an effort to extend France's post-colonial influence in Rwanda and saw events through an ethnic prism. Mitterrand had close ties with Rwanda's Hutu president, Juvenal Habyarimana, whom the report described as racist, corrupt, and violent. His death in a helicopter crash unleashed the genocide.
Soyons clairs, nous n'avons absolument pas voulu prendre la place des juges, hein, nous sommes historiens.
The commission's members were historians, not judges, Duclair said. Although no documents showed France wanted a genocide, it was important to question the country's blindness and heavy responsibility. France and Rwanda have long traded accusations over the killings. Former President Nicolas Sarkozy earlier conceded France had made mistakes. Now Rwanda describes the Duclair report a step forward. France's leading newspaper, Le Monde, called it a decisive step on the path to truth. Based on cables, documents, and other material from government archives, the roughly 1,000-page report looks at France's role before and during the genocide, including its controversial military and humanitarian Opération Turquoise. Kigali is expected to shortly release its own report on the genocide. But instead of putting this chapter to rest, the Duclair report has unleashed mixed reactions and soul-searching here.
Mais en tout cas, on a les conclusions de Vincent Duclair, ça c'est précis, il y a le rapport globalement qui est important.
Alors, France's former foreign minister, Hubert Védrine, a top Mitterrand aide during the genocide, calls the report important. But in a Radio France International interview, he disputed France was blind to warnings of an impending slaughter. He said the country was just trying to preserve peace. Others say the report doesn't go far enough. Genocide-era documents are missing or destroyed, they say, and the commission has left many questions unanswered. Survie Association, a French group highly critical of France's colonial rule, slams it as superficial. Spokesman David Martin.
First, it's needed that there is recognition of the complicity of France and apologies to the Rwandan people and the Rwandan government. This is the first thing. Second, there should be trial for people who have taken decision, who have assisted decision. There are some people who are still alive today, and which is very important that justice is done.
Martin's association has filed several judicial complaints related to the genocide, but the process is slow and expensive, he says. He doubts French courts have the appetite to take on the country's controversial past. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, April 2nd. The Global Coalition for Security and Democracy in Nigeria, a civil society group, is planning a series of protests in London against President Muhammadu Buhari beginning today, Friday. Nigerian officials say the president is in London for a routine medical checkup. But organizers of the protest say Mr. Buhari's medical trip violates his promise not to seek treatment abroad. Frederick Odorich is the global coordinator for the Global Coalition for Security and Democracy in Nigeria. He tells viewers Peter Clotty that organizers of the protest will petition British authorities to ban the Nigerian president and other senior public officials from seeking medical attention in Britain.
Right there in London at the Chatham House, when President Buhari was campaigning, he said, "What is the difference between me and those who elected us to represent them? Absolutely nothing. Why should Nigerian president not fly with other Nigerians publicly? Why do I need to embark on a foreign trip as a president with a huge crowd with public funds? Why do I need to go for foreign medical trip if we cannot make our hospitals functional?" He made that speech on the 21st of February, 2015. Since then, this same man has spent over 200 days using public money to treat himself. Since he became president, the only thing that has improved in Nigeria is the health of the president himself.
The state takes care of a president when the president is indisposed. In this case, the president is seeking routine medical attention, as the government said. Why is it wrong?
It is wrong because when he was campaigning, he promised that he will never, ever travel abroad for medical treatment. Since he has been traveling abroad, the so-called anti-corruption fighter has refused to tell Nigerians how much of public money he has used. He has refused to tell Nigerians, as a public servant, the nature of his illness. It is wrong because he borrowed $300 million to fight malaria in 2018. We have not seen the result of that money.
It is not customary in Africa and by extension in Nigeria to have the ailment of the president broadcast to the masses. Why should this be different?
This is different because there is a huge budget for the presidential hospital known as the Asoro Clinic Hospital right there in Abuja. Billions have been spent in that hospital, and the wife of the president categorically told Nigerians that there is no syringe in the hospital. What does a president need to stay in the UK for 2 weeks for, just for medical checkup?
What does this protest seek to convey? And do you think your objective will be achieved with this series of protests you've planned beginning Friday?
We are not just protesting. We are also writing to the UK government that they must immediately begin the process of banning Nigerian president and the ministers and those holding public offices from seeking medical attention in the United Kingdom, because the entire budget of the Federal Republic of Nigeria is being borrowed.
That was Frederick Odorich, Global Coordinator for the Global Coalition for Security and Democracy in Nigeria. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty. Liberian voters have rejected 8 propositions to amend certain articles of their constitution. The country voted last December in a constitutional referendum whether to allow dual citizenship, reduce the term of office for president and members of the House of Representatives from 6 to 5 years and senators from 9 to 7 years. Rita Jilabwe has details from Monrovia.
Article 91 of the Liberian Constitution says that in order for a proposition to be ratified, 2/3 of those voting must vote in favor. Dual citizenship for natural-born Liberians was one of the 8 propositions that was highly debated amongst Liberians. National Elections Commission Chairperson David Etta Brown-Lasana read the aggregate votes on the dual citizenship proposition.
Yes vote. 202,017, constituting 51.43%. No vote, 190,814. Total valid vote, 392,831, constituting 100%.
Madam Brown-Lasana says why all 8 propositions received over 50% of the votes. None of them passed the 2/3 majority required for passage. Accordingly, the Elections Commission chairperson says the referendum did not meet the benchmark.
Fellow Liberians, the commission is pleased to announce that based on the results of the 2020 referendum, none of the 8 propositions met the constitutional threshold of 2/3.
Emmanuel Wetti is former president of the Union of Liberian Associations in the Americas, ULA. He was also chair of the All-Liberian Conference on Dual Citizenship, held December 2019 in the U.S. state of Maryland. Wetti says ULA is currently working with the Liberian legislature to change portions of the constitution that prohibit dual citizenship.
Our next plan on dual citizenship is to work with the lawmakers to repeal Section 22.1 and 22.2 of the Alien and Nationality Law. When this is successful, those natural-born Liberians who naturalize in another country will now become citizens of Liberia.
Meanwhile, some Liberian civil society groups blamed the negative results of the referendum on the lack of sufficient awareness by the Elections Commission. Adama Dempster, the secretary of the Civil Society Human Rights Advocacy Platform, says the Elections Commission did not adhere to the people's calls for postponement of the referendum.
There were many institutions and individuals that recommended that the government put aside the referendum for 2023 and use the opportunity to create awareness so that citizens will have a broad knowledge about those propositions and give them a balanced position to vote.
The Elections Commission did not say whether there would be another referendum during the 2023 general elections. Rita Jirawe, VOA News, Monrovia, Liberia.
Today, April 2nd, is World Autism Awareness Day. 1 in 25 children in Kenya are autistic, according to the Autism Society of Kenya. In many parts of Africa, the condition is still linked to witchcraft, ancestral spirits, or the devil. The World Health Organization says such superstitious beliefs are some of the reasons that autism is diagnosed late in Africa. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, some Kenyan parents of autistic children say stigma and discrimination are their biggest concerns.
Autism spectrum disorder is a development that impairs one's ability to communicate and interact. This condition is a burden for many parents and families of affected children, especially in Africa, where information on this condition is insufficient. As the 2021 United Nations Autism Message states, inclusivity for all. As the world recover from the COVID-19 pandemic, many autistic children miss out on socioeconomic activities in the society. A Kenyan, Juliet Awur, has a 4-year-old boy who is autistic and still struggling with speech. She says the condition is difficult to manage and requires a lot of attention.
Most people think that maybe autism is like a mental disorder. Some people probably think maybe the baby has been bewitched. After Nathan being diagnosed with autism, I went like I blacked out. And also looking for help. Where can we take him for proper assessment? How can this be treated? And then we realized autism cannot even be treated.
Autism in Africa often come with severe stigma and therefore the need for awareness and knowledge of intervention methods. Juliet says there is lack of resources, knowledge, as well as lack of community support on autism in Kenya.
The challenges that people living with autism face, or maybe autistic parents face, is stigmatization.
Another Kenyan, Lydia Opio, has an autistic 5-year-old girl, struggled with rejection from school to school. Her child is hyperactive, and teachers cannot afford to attend to her in a normal school setting.
What I've faced with my daughter when looking for a school for her, in fact, has inspired me to open a school myself. I've been told to my face that my daughter cannot mingle with normal kids, that I should take her to a special school. Every other school we are referred to when we take her for the first day orientation and assessment, they turn us back and tell us they cannot manage our daughter. She climbs everywhere. She doesn't fear height. We cannot even live in an apartment ourselves.
Lydia, however, has a message to parents with autistic children.
And my message to mothers with autistic kids is, you are the pillars of these babies. They are nothing without us. Last year, I had to resign my job because of my daughter.
The causes of autism spectrum disorder and other developmental disabilities in Africa are often attributed to supernatural forces. With pressure from families, churches, and society at large, children with autism in Africa have been known to be locked away or hidden at home by their parents. According to World Health Organization, globally, people with autistic disorder are most of the time subjected to stigma, discrimination, and human rights violation, and that access to services and support for people in this condition is inadequate. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Milwaukee, USA.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with the announcement by the Confederation of African Football that the African Cup of Nations tournament will be staged in Cameroon from January the 9th to February the 6th next year. A virtual executive committee meeting chaired by the recently elected president, Patrice Motsepe from South Africa, also decided that a draw to divide the 24 qualifiers into six groups will be held on June the 25th. Meanwhile, controversy is still trailing the last fixture in the AFCON 2021 qualifying series between Sierra Leone and Benin Republic. The CAF organizing committee for the African Cup of Nations has decided to postpone the AFCON 2021 qualification match to the next FIFA international window in June 2021. The match was abandoned after Benin protested the result of a medical examination which named five of their squad members as positive for COVID-19. The controversy left the final place at next year's African Cup undecided on the last day of qualifying. Sierra Leone needed to win at home to reach the tournament for the first time in 25 years, while the visitors only needed a draw. Staying with football news, Mozambique national football coach Luis Goncalves has been fired. He became the second coach to lose his job this week following the conclusion of the 2021 African Cup of Nations qualifying. South African coach Molefe Ntseki was the first to be shown the exit door after failing to reach the finals. A Mozambique National Football Federation statement confirmed the Maputo-born handler had been sacked after the Mambas lost 1-0 at home to Cape Verde and finished last in the group, including Cameroon and Rwanda. Former Black Stars goalkeeper Richard Kingston is aiming to become the next Barcelona football coach once the opportunity presents itself. He compared the Ghana Black Stars as a second or third division club side when asked if he can prove anything different if given the opportunity to coach Ghana's national football team.
I want to coach Barcelona because I know I have what it takes to do it. So coaching Black Stars is not like something extraordinary. It's something like coaching second division or third division. Yeah, it's just you take a pen and paper and write yourself, myself. So it's just something common for me to do it.
In basketball news, the Basketball African League will tip off in Kigali, Rwanda in May. A year after being postponed due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the new league involves 12 teams from the continent and is a partnership between the FIBA and the NBA. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, April 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.